Aloha and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As we like to tell you every week, you can get in on this conversation. But just a reminder, this is a rebroadcast of today's Town Square, and so phone calls will not be taken at the number given. Last night, it was reported that Senate Ways and Means Chair Jill Takkuto was to be ousted today, likely over her handling of rail funding. Not related to rail, House Speaker Joe Suki is also expected to lose his position. Meanwhile, both chambers are deadlocked over rail. There's a whole lot of shaking going on down at the legislature on this last scheduled day of the session. And today on Town Square, we'll review the outcomes of the legislature up to this point, what lawmakers passed and what they didn't, in a session overshadowed by how to fund the rail deficit. Joining me in studio are Neil Milner and Colin Moore. Neil Milner is a former political science professor at the University of Hawaii, a columnist for Civil Beat, and the contributing editor to HPR's The Conversation. Colin Moore is the director of the UH Public Policy Center. And, of course, you're here, too. What bills did you follow this session? And also, what marks would you give lawmakers for their performance this time around? Again, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Neil, Colin, welcome back.
Happy to be here.
Me too.
It's kind of a wild day as we're ending the session. I want to talk to you a little bit about the political climate in which we find ourselves, but especially given the fact that we have a one-party system. And we've talked about this before and what it means, but in terms of how we're seeing it play out now, and in some cases some would say that, you know, we're showing a bit of weakness here in the system because it is a one-party system. What would both of you have to say to that?
Well, Shakespeare doesn't seem to have anything on the Hawaii State Legislature. I mean, they love this cloak and dagger stuff, and you've seen a bit of it with the potential ouster of Takkuto and Suki. But Neil and I were talking about this a little bit before the show, and one thing that's interesting is that in a one-party state, the stakes are a little lower to get rid of your leadership. I mean, actually here, if there was a significant Republican minority, first, we'd know much more about the internal fights. I mean, often this stuff surfaces at the very last moment when a committee chair, for example, is about to lose her job. And the leadership seems a bit weaker because mainly people get removed because of a violation of norms, because their colleagues didn't like how they handled a certain piece of legislation. It's less ideological. It's less about policy. And I think that is the case with Takkuto. I mean, of course, this is a big fight over rail, one of the most difficult issues the legislature has to deal with. But what I understand is a lot of those frustrations were from what other legislators felt were her lack of transparency, maybe trying to strong arm her own position on this through. And at the end of the day, I think her colleagues decided that, you know, she wasn't showing proper deference to the other members of the Senate. I mean, the problem with that is it can be very, very difficult to manage an issue like this if you don't have strong leadership.
And if you don't have engagement.
Well, yeah, exactly.
with that leadership. But, Neil, I want to get your thoughts on this, too, because we've heard from Joe Suki that, hey, we're kind of a secretive bunch. And, you know, we kind of have been seeing this play out in what we find out about at the last moment. And in some cases, wondering what has happened throughout the whole session when something like, for example, with the rail issue, you know, you had the whole time to be able to talk about it, and then we just hear about this at the end. Your point would be that if you had some Republicans in there, a significant amount of them at least, that this would be a lot more transparent.
Well, you talked before about a whole lot of shaking going on. This is really good golly, Miss Molly, because they really do change the way that they normally do things. So let's first talk about how they changed and then talk about what would happen if there was a Republican Party of a large enough size in the legislature to have more influence. The thing that really changed that was so different this time is the degree to which they fought about rail in public. It takes a lot of work to get the legislature to be transparent near the end of the session. They're pretty transparent early on normally, but once you cross over, things start getting locked down and all kinds of surprises happen. But you had a public hearing on rail funding in which two senators got into a basic argument that was for the kind of decorum that you have here. They actually showed as if they were angry toward each other. That's very different than what you normally have here. If you had a Republican Party in the legislature of any size. And think about how little the word Republican ever comes up in all of this rail stuff from the beginning of the legislature to the end. If they were there, they would be making much more noise earlier on. The press would pay attention to them. A lot less of this would be going on in secret, and there wouldn't have been as many surprises. The other good golly, Miss Molly, is the whole notion of changing your leadership at the end of a session, right? I mean, you're changing on the last day of a session when, in fact, it's over for all intents and purposes. It's really about the future. But I think the fundamental thing is that the norm of transparency became a much, which is not a norm that the legislature likes very much, became a norm here.
But you know, I mean, this is a little even more unusual than normal, because we've seen them change leadership at the end of the session, but we're not even there yet. They still have the
right.
most important thing to deal with, and they're getting rid of arguably the two most powerful people.
And
in the
difference, one other difference is that when they change the leadership at other times, let's just say they do it for reasons that are much more mysterious than this. It's always hard to figure out how these coalitions work. This one, there's at least a policy difference.
We did see this, though, mid-session, because remember, Angus McKelvey was replaced as Commerce and Consumer Protection Chair. He got bumped over to higher ed, and ostensibly because people were saying that they didn't like how he pushed forward certain things out of committee and didn't engage either.
I believe that's when the defense of secrecy was made public, wasn't it? Saying, wasn't that the bill when,
that's right.
when the vice chair said that the trouble with having all of this opposition out in the public is that both sides get in touch with the legislature and get angry with them. And that's when Joe Suki made his little statement about that we operate according to secrecy, basically. And so McKelvey, whatever else he did, there was clearly that violation.
Well, and Suki and some of the older legislators in particular, I think, see this as a virtue, that this is a way they can cut deals, and this is why the Democratic Party is so dominant. They don't air their dirty laundry in public. I mean, and if you're not willing to follow those norms, I think you're very quickly shown the door.
And without an opposition, there isn't much to challenge them.
Except for when people say that lets the public out of the situation. They don't get to go to some of these hearings. They don't get to hear some of these perspectives. And we've heard that for years and years and years. And it seems that despite all of the rhetoric about engaging with the legislature, that in fact, in many cases, the gesture is hands up and we don't really want to
engage.
Well,
the other thing to remember is just how exceptional the rail issue is. I mean, it's thrown into the legislature's lap for reasons that are beyond their control, basically, with no feasible fix that's easy to do. And that, of course, raised up the dander and of everything else here. So to the extent that this was based on attitudes toward rail, it may not change very much.
And easy being the operative word. It's not that if there's no fix. It's just that the state the state legislators don't like to do things that's going to, for obvious reasons, anger constituents. And there's no easy way out of this problem.
Especially since they think that the mayor lied to them and the mayor that the bad decisions made fiscally when rail started are now falling to the legislature to have to solve the problem.
But I think that the key issue here that happened was that, I mean, so that it's not so much that they don't like to engage the public. They do. They like to know where everybody is on every single issue. What they don't like are unexpected things where they don't have enough time to clearly see the reaction of particularly important constituencies like the tourism industry. And I think that was the deal here.
But that's exactly what happened here.
Well, that's what I mean.
Exactly. Sure.
The fact that the hotel tax idea came out of nowhere. Senators had no time really to talk through these issues with the tourism industry. That for them was an unforgivable sin
and
made by the House and Jill Takuda.
And the legislature, we'll probably get back into this when we look at some of the bills that failed. The legislature here traditionally doesn't like to pass a bill in which there are strong opinions on both sides. The right to the right to die bill is clearly an example,
and tied into Joe Suki's outfit.
Yeah, well, that's I mean, if you have strong opinions on both sides, then maybe it's best to back away. Of course, that's a very cautious. I don't want to say conservative. I don't mean politically conservative. It's an ultra cautious way to approach public policy. If you have to somehow only go forward with issues in which everybody is on one side or there isn't much strong opinion on the other. It's hard to imagine the right to die bill could ever pass if that's going to be the criteria.
Well, and no, and that apparently is one of the reasons that Suki is being shown the door is because he pushed pretty forcefully to get that bill passed. But, I mean, this goes back to the way we started this show, which is that if you imagined a pretty robust minority party of Republicans waiting in the wings, it's much easier to say, look, we've got to deliver. We've got to make some of these hard decisions. Now, with essentially no opposition party, they can just say, well, we'll work a little bit around the margins, but don't worry, everyone will get reelected next time, and no one has to make any hard decisions, and you know, you won't have anybody mad at you. The fact, the extraordinary thing about a lot of our local legislators,
yes,
which I mean, really is remarkable, is the extent to which they'll say, but people were yelling at us. They were mad. Of course they were. You've got to make some tough decisions.
But, go to England. Hang out with Parliament for a while.
Yeah, that's right. Or try to raise a family with that criteria. My kids are going to get angry if I make them do this. Well, okay, don't make them do this, you know.
Okay, but today on Town Square, this is the last day of the legislature, supposedly, and we are taking a look at what the legislature has wrought thus far. We want to hear from you, too. 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, it's 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream, 877-941-3689. But just a reminder, this is a rebroadcast of today's Town Square, and so phone calls will not be taken at the number given. You've been watching all of this. You've been hearing all of this now for months. How do you grade this legislative session, and what was in it for you or what wasn't? We want to hear from you. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Okay, so we already started to talk a little bit about the medical aid in dying bill. There were so many who believed right up until the very end that this was going to be the year, and then it just disappeared as it had in other times and didn't make it through. Do you put any particular reason behind that one?
Well, I just gave the main. I mean, there's a couple of. Look, there are very important ethical and let's call them ideological and religious arguments on both sides. And I think what was important here is that there are arguments that are made passionately on both sides. And I think that ultimately doomed the legislation, that the legislature decided that if there's such a large difference of opinion, because they tinkered around with the language, they did all sorts of stuff. But when all is said and done, you have to accept the idea that you're either going to allow a person to go forward to end his or her life or you're not. And there was just too much intensity on each side as far as the legislature was concerned.
And that's unlikely to change anytime in the future. I mean, we've seen this bill before. And, of course, the ostensible reason why it didn't pass is that there were all of these questions about how you administer the program, how you keep people safe. But I entirely agree with Neil. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a philosophical issue. You either think this is the right thing to allow people to do, or you think it's promoting suicide. And there's really no way to come to a compromise. And these are the sorts of issues that legislators hate.
And again, in another setting where there would be a significant opposition, it's likely that you would have social conservatives and that they would have been more involved, Republican social conservatives. Again, this issue was not at all fought on party lines.
Okay, we've got a caller on one. Who's on one? Michelle calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Michelle. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Okay, first off, I have a question on rail. We are too far into this project to ditch it. That I understand. I live in Kaneohe, so I don't know how much I'm going to directly benefit, and that's not important to me. Looking at the big picture is. And what I don't understand is why they couldn't just agree to round the GET up to 5%, build the dang thing to Ala Moana, and then, okay, from 4%, that would go for, like, general funding, and then everything else would be for rail. And why can't they agree to earmark it for rail for not only the completion of the project as is, but to maintain it once it's built?
Well, you're asking a lot of questions that a lot of people have been asking, too. Why not this? Why not that? And clearly, neither chamber is coming up with answers that will be acceptable to the other.
Well, if you can look at this in a couple of ways. If you can say it's about money. And when you do negotiations, say labor negotiations, and there is a good level of goodwill, that doesn't mean there's no antagonism, but there's a kind of mutual trust, then it's easy to negotiate about money. The way Michelle kind of suggests, you put a little here, you take a little there. But this has a history. It has a terrible history that's very much colored by the fact that the legislature here feels that it's been dumped on by the mayor, doesn't trust them, and that this whole project has been a disaster. So that makes it much harder for people to agree that this is simply a money issue. Every time we think about this as simply a money issue, some disaster happens, and it turns out that it's something worse, and people go, you know, get even more cynical. So I think that's part of the dynamic that was going on here. If you listen to the legislature, particularly Senator Okuda, when she would talk about this in ways that were as much about people not being honest as about, oh, it's going to cost so much money.
And she has a point. I mean, and I think that's what a lot of people feel. So when the mayor comes back, when Hart comes back and say, oh, we just need a little bit more money to let us finish this project.
It's like, yeah, we heard that again. And how many times are we going to hear it? Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty soon you're talking about real money. Now, I mean, the other issue is that, I mean, this was the policy issue that was debated about whether or not this money should come from an extension of the GET or from the transient accommodation tax. I mean, part of that is that our tax structure here in Hawaii really hits working families hard. It hits low-income folks very hard, much more so than in other states. And the GET is part of that. And so folks like Sylvia Luke, I mean, whether she was genuine or not, that was her argument in favor of increasing the hotel tax, was that we're building this rail on the backs of the people who are the least able to absorb these costs.
So if you're just dealing with money, you can work on that. If it were, you take the GET, you can have exemptions. So, I mean, a lot of states have sales tax exemptions for certain things to make it more progressive. It never really reached that point here where there was enough agreement to say, all right, let's really disaggregate this. Let's really work on some details that can make this work.
And neither for the TAT, because the counties were saying, what's in it for us? Why should we bother to do this just to raise money for Oahu's rail?
Oahu. Yeah.
All right. Michelle, you still there? Michelle, you there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, good. You had also another question, I understand, about committee chairs.
Yeah, why are they given such incredible power that they can just, like the Death with Dignity bill, basically, from what I understood, was that it was basically the committee chair that killed it. So many people have been in favor of this, myself included, and if it goes to committee, it doesn't matter what everybody else thinks. If the committee chair doesn't like it, they can kill it. And I'll just take the rest of your responses off air.
All right, Michelle, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. But isn't that what it means to be a committee chair in our system? I mean, you'd have to fundamentally change the entire system.
We have pretty strong committee chairs, particularly the money committee chairs. I mean, and they can end bills, as everyone knows, by just not giving them a hearing. I mean, that's the most effective way.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing to understand, though, this is revealed by what's just happened with Jill Takuda, is that the committee chairs are not invincible. I mean, this isn't a situation where you just become a committee chair purely as the result of seniority and you can do whatever you want. You still are accountable to your colleagues. And even if you're a very powerful committee chair, you can go down. I mean, this really is more of an organizational question. The legislature feels like this is the best way, the most efficient way to pass legislation. They try to elect people who they think are good negotiators, who are smart, who have presumably in some cases some expertise in the committee they're overseeing, who know how to communicate with their colleagues, who, you know, in some cases are willing to take the heat for difficult decisions that, you know, maybe behind the scenes their colleagues actually want them to do. I mean, they might say publicly that they're in favor of a bill or opposed to a bill, but, you know, then they rely in some cases on committee chairs to secretly kill it. So
it's a fairly traditional way in legislators to do
that. That's exactly right. I mean, so the basic answer is committee chairs have a lot of power because the members of the legislature want them to have that power.
You can also pull there is a way to pull a bill out of a committee even if the chair kills it, but it's almost never used. For if you listen to us talking about the importance of legislative norms, you can understand why.
All right, we've got Callers on the line. And just a reminder, you're listening to a rebroadcast of Town Square, and calls will not be taken at the number given. And we have Nikhil Ananda calling us from Maui. Is that right?
Oh, yes. Thanks, Beth Ann. So a couple of really quick points. First of all, a grade of F for the legislature. There are so many progressive bills that died. You were talking about one, the death with dignity, and I have to disagree with both of your guests. It's not a religious moral issue, and it's not a suicide bill. If someone is 6 months away from dying, it's been done in other states, Oregon being the best example. The other point is they spoke about why don't we have an opposition Republicans, because half the Democrats in Hawaii are Republicans. Alan R. Carr, the mayor of Maui, Mike Gabbard, these are Republicans. In most locales in the United States, half of the Democrats in the state would be Republicans. Why wouldn't the opposition be a more progressive party like the Green Party? We don't have a sunshine law. The legislature's not beholden to it. So that's why these things go that happen in secret and so behind the scenes. And, of course, there's so much legislation as far as campaign finance reform and the public financing of elections. So because most of the legislators are controlled by money, the development industries, the biochemical companies, et cetera, they are just beholden to what they are told to do.
All right. Thanks very much for your opinion. Thanks very much for the call. He gives them an F. We're going to move on. What bills were you watching this session? What made it? What didn't make it? And what do you think this says about this legislative session that will be completing today? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. As we look at some of the bills that didn't make it, obviously we've already talked about medical aid in dying, but there were a lot of other ones that had a great deal of emotion behind it. Certainly sick leave was one of them, and that didn't go down in the way that people had wanted it to. Family leave, too.
Right, that's right. Sick leave is a really interesting example of a bill that started out as a good bill, a pretty robust sick leave bill. I mean, Hawaii would be – there are very few states – I'm not sure everyone knows this – very few states that actually do have state-mandated sick leave. We were about to join them. It started out as a pretty robust bill, and over time it was amended.
Yeah.
So it would arguably have become the weakest sick leave law bill in the nation. There were carve-outs for employees who made a certain percentage over the minimum wage, if you worked for a company that had fewer than X number of employees. And the argument was, a traditional one, which is that small businesses said, look, this is just too costly. We already suffer under too many regulations. And advocates for low-income folks say we have to have a sick leave bill. In the state, it makes economic sense. People don't come to work sick. It protects people's jobs. You know, it gives the low-income people a little more financial security. But over time, even the bill's original advocates became opponents and wanted to see this bill killed, and it did die. And so that's one interesting thing. You can see pieces of legislation evolve over the session. And in this case, some of the most powerful, I think, lobbying groups in the state, which really are small business owners, going to their legislators and saying, look, we can't afford this. You've got to amend it. And eventually you get a bill that not even its original proponents favored. So this bill sort of died because at the end of the day, it was just this Frankenstein's monster that nobody supported. But I think you're going to see it again next session because there's a lot of people in favor of it.
The pressure to have sick leave, the pressure to have real family leave that goes just beyond the very narrow scope that we see it
and
now.
And unlike something like medical leave, I mean, this is a bill you can compromise over, you can negotiate over. It's just about money. There are middle positions. Medical aid and dying, it's really tough to come up with a compromise at the end of the day on that.
All right, we're going to go take another caller. If you want to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Kimo calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Kimo. Welcome to Town Square.
Yes, it's a pleasure here. We get on the radio. My goodness, who would have thought?
Well, welcome.
Yes, I wish I could say nice things about the legislature. As somebody from the Outer Islands get screwed left, right, and center. It's very sad. Are you still there?
We're right here. I'm listening.
Okay. I don't know. I wish the legislature was more effective. we have land and natural resources. They do anything they want. You know, we have this nice thing going on up on the that they approved. And we also had the university was involved in that, this nice project up here on the Mauna Kea. Oh, they didn't go through all the process. What happened? Yeah, we had other the university and land and natural resources doing what they want.
You're saying that the legislature is not effective in the way that you would like to see it effective. What about your lawmakers there on the Big Island? What kind of a grade would you give them?
They were thrown out of their committees by all those nice legislators from over there in Oahu. Yes, very democratic, very undemocratic. This legislature was a Trump legislature before Trump.
Okay. All right, Kimo. Thanks very much for the call, and glad you're joining us on the Big Island. I want to go back and take a look at some of the things that were on the list of what made it and what didn't make it. Of the things that didn't make it, there were many significant ones, but we talked about one at length earlier on in the session, the minimum wage.
Well, the minimum wage, one way to think of it, the minimum wage didn't pass.
Nope.
And originally it was, what, for $15 an hour. One of the ways to understand why the minimum wage didn't succeed here is to look at why minimum wages of relatively the same size have succeeded elsewhere. The main reason, say in the state of Washington, is that they didn't go through the legislature. They passed the referendum. And so the legislature was a more popular vote, which means that sometimes you can avoid the complexities and the doubts and all of that. The second thing is, I'm not sure that it had the union. I'm not saying they didn't support it. The union and progressive support that has happened in other places. And the third thing is that in some other places it was citywide, and that was a more forcible kind of thing. So I think, you know, it's the same old thing. This place, the legislature has always been pretty cautious about raising the minimum wage. Their aspirations tend to be higher than what they pass.
So where do you see the fight for 15 going?
My standard response to that is that it'll come back and it'll come back and it'll come back and it.
And by the time it comes back, it won't mean anything because we will.
Well, because you might, yeah. That's you know that my general notion about how the legislature works here is that they're ultra cautious. And they'll adopt small changes, and then revisit. And so that's, I would say that it'll come back, but I don't see it having a dramatic change.
All right. Before we take another call, I want to ask you, on your list of what didn't pass.
Well, there's
Colin,
so
what's,
much.
What's
I mean, there,
oh,
there's
of course
there's
could,
a group of,
list
of
them, but
progressive policies that got a lot of attention early on and didn't end up passing. The oxybenzone sunscreen ban. Styrofoam ban.
Pesticide ban.
The pesticide ban. The payday lending interest rate cap, which has come up again and again and again, which has been one of these positions that progressives have advocated very, very strongly for. But sometimes it's limited at 18%, sometimes at 32%. But right now it's still, it can be 400%, or really, as I understand, as much as payday lenders want to charge. And I know that progressives felt a bit betrayed by the legislature because there was a lot of initial enthusiasm for these.
The Hawaii promise, yeah.
The Hawaii promise. That might be dealt with a little bit through internally at UH. And then there's also the constitutional amendment for education funding. That didn't end up going through. So there's a bunch of these, even graduate student unionization at UH, which did pass last time and didn't pass this time. I mean, it may just be that Rail started sucking up all the oxygen in the room at
you
the
think.
End of the session. I mean, that certainly happened. But I think some progressives were feeling very hopeful around crossover, and then their bills just didn't end up.
Well, even
going all anywhere.
Male voting. I mean, we thought that had such a push this time, and that went down to defeat, too.
But progressives feeling hopeful, I think, is a little step past where the progressives are in terms of political power. There has been a movement that has developed. As the aftermath of the Democratic campaign and were Sanders people. And their goal is really to go ahead and to begin to influence the legislative process. And one of the ways they talk about is actually getting elected to the legislature. So all of these aspirations and all of these the kind of publicity they got is quite a bit different than being able to transfer that into actual power in the legislature, where in the notion of semi-secrecy, someone is actually actively maintaining your agenda.
Our number is 941-3689 if you're on Oahu and you want to get in on this conversation. But just a reminder, this is a rebroadcast of today's Town Square, and so phone calls will not be taken at the number given. Taking a look at the ledge and the grade that you'd give it as we are in its last day. We had a shy caller who made a comment, why not allow gaming to address revenue for rail funding concerns? I mean, that's the perennial question that comes up for everything. Why not just...
Joe Stuckey has been pushing gambling for years.
Forever. Okay, we're just going to move along with that one. We have Rupert calling us from Kailua, and he says, what about mayors holding another job and the bill that would have restricted them from doing that? Rupert, are you there?
Yes, hello. Thank
Hi
you,
there.
Beth Ann, for taking my call. Big fan of your show.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so one bill I was watching that I thought was a common sense bill was the one addressing Kurt Caldwell making, I think, $200,000 a year for 2 hours worth of work for the, is it the Central Pacific Bank?
Territorial Savings.
I'm sorry, yeah, Territorial Savings Bank. I thought that was a common sense bill, and I always thought that was kind of unethical that he makes more than he makes as a mayor.
Well, this.
Why do you think that bill died?
Because I think it seemed pretty clearly an anti-Kurt Caldwell bill, and Kurt Caldwell has a lot of power in the legislature. I mean, I think you saw this demonstrated in the fact that I believe he was somewhat instrumental in working with the legislature to get the GET extension back on and dump this transient accommodation tax. So I actually think it's a fairly reasonable bill myself. I agree, but I think in part because it clearly went after and singled out a very powerful political actor, it just never had that sort of traction.
It's never been ruled a violation of ethics, and that's the good news for Caldwell. The bad news to me has always been his defense, that his defense has always been, I don't have to do any work for it, so there's no conflict of interest. That's what he said.
Where
in
can
the
you get a gig like
yeah,
that? Can
really?
I sign up?
Can we
yeah,
really. Yeah.
Well, it's called retirement, but I'm not making $200,000 a
well,
year.
Well, it's going to be a while for Colin for me, so there you go.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, but before we move on to some of the other callers, I do want to ask you, though, about the final plan for rail being so uncertain at this point. And the timeline in some of that. And, Colin, you had an issue with the Constitution and what we might have to see happen if, in fact, this were to pass it. There's not necessarily enough time for that. Was that Colin or was that you, Neil?
Well, I just looked at there seems to be a couple of issues, constitutional issues, maybe. One has to do with the procedure, with a kind of how many times there has to be readings, and the other one has to do with whether this is part of the original bill. There actually is something in the Constitution that says it's Article 3, Section 15. No bill should become a law unless it shall pass through three readings in each House on separate days, and then it has some other stuff about printed copies. That's the constitutional issue that some of the people were concerned about, and that, in effect, what you had was this coming out of nowhere. I tried to find some case law on this. I'm not a lawyer, but I was looking around a little bit on the state. There isn't very much, but courts tend to be deferential toward legislatures' internal procedures, even though this is a constitutional thing. So that my guess is that they would be pretty deferential to, let's say, an imaginative reading toward this sort of thing, that it's not a done deal. If you took this thing literally, it's not a done deal that the legislature would lose. But now it's not an issue because that involved
tourist. Because we're deadlocked.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a few more callers. You want to join us? 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. This is Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Going now to Jane calling us from Waikiki. Aloha, Jane.
Aloha.
What's your issue?
I'm very disappointed that House Bill, I believe it was 1499, did not pass. And this is the bill that talked about the priority of payments on condominiums. Sometimes they're accused of bogus infractions, and it will go to the attorney in the association. The person will have to pay these attorney fees, the bogus charges, and they never get to pay their maintenance fees. Then what happens, there's a lien on the property, and then we'll go to non-judicial foreclosure, which there are some cases currently in the state that are happening. This is very unfair to the owner. You know, we're the highest homeless population in the country. Do we really want to make more people homeless? I mean, does this make sense?
Well, so I don't know about homeless, but maybe they'd have to sell their condo or choose to move someplace else. But Neil,
well,
I think
maybe they can't because they're seniors, and maybe they've had other problems in the family where there's been some medical issues, and they've already had to sell their other property. So now this is their last house, home, you know, roof over their head. Well, so they're going to be homeless.
Neil, you want to answer her?
Well, a quick context answer, and then something in more detail. The quick context answer is that you've had condo laws nationally. Hawaii was really the residential condo was first, so you had them around for 55 years or so. The first few years, the modifications in the law were all about protecting you from developers. For the last 50 years, all of the condo law changes have been about protecting you from one another. That is the way condos operate internally. Here's how I'd summarize what the legislature has shown over the years about these kinds of issues. 10-foot pole. They really don't want to get into them. They really, because every time it comes up, you get arguments from both sides. It's too much inside baseball. And I think other than to introduce some kind of mediation over the years, they don't want to go down this road, even though I understand exactly what she said because I've witnessed it. I've lived in a condo for a long time. It's a serious problem, but I don't think the legislature is going to solve it.
All right. Thanks very much, Jane, for weighing in. Going now to Michael Domeyer calling us from I don't know where. Where are you calling us from?
I'm calling you from the Big Island.
Okay. Nice to talk to you. Lots of Big Island calls today. Go ahead. Welcome to Town Square.
This is the first legislative session that actually was paying attention and being involved because there was a bill, a Senate bill 1240, that passed, which was essentially it's going to phase out the collection of marine aquarium fish off the reefs around Hawaii. And I'm a scientist. I have a PhD in coral reef ecology. And what shocked me is the bill had absolutely no scientific input. And, in fact, it cited a paper that I got the author of that paper to refute how it was used. Again, I got three other coral reef fish experts to say the premise behind this bill is just wrong. And I couldn't get anyone to read it, couldn't get anyone to pay attention. And I was kind of shocked when one of the House legislators said, well, look, whatever the speaker says, that's the way we vote. We said we almost never get to vote on these things ourselves. We just have to vote his way. And that was kind of surprising to me. I mean, we have a two-party system, but in Hawaii, that doesn't seem like we really do because basically everyone is Democrat.
All right. Well, probably not a big surprise to the folks around my table right now.
I admire that legislator's candor. He actually said that.
What an amazing thing to say. Yes.
But this does, I mean, I think people who are new to the legislative process find this shocking. In fact, there's always this which is not to say that the caller's been right. I mean, it sounds like many of his points are legitimate about this bill, but I mean, one classic trick is to say, you know, so and so never even bothered to read the bill. I mean, in some ways, that's not necessarily a fair criticism. There's a reason many legislators are deferential to the speaker or the committee chair. The truth of the matter is, there's just way too much work to do, way too much information to absorb, way too many reports to try to wade through among people who are. You know, they have their own professional expertise, but mainly they're generalists. And that is the reason behind what might seem like pure madness, that they're just lemmings following Joe Suki, you know, to the edge of a cliff. That this the reason legislatures are organized this way is simply to process all of this information. I mean, it's one reason they do tend to be a bit conservative. They like to see bills three times in a row, 3 years in a row. So
to make sure something doesn't surface,
something doesn't surface unexpectedly, to make sure that they have enough time to read through all this material. I mean, maybe the counter argument is they need larger staffs. We need to go to a full-time legislature, something like that, to give them a bit more time.
I don't know the history of this. Has this bill been around in some form for a while, or did it just come out of? So you would think, I mean, they may behave like lemmings, but unlike lemmings, we have lemmings with PhDs in the sciences. And if this is the first time through a bill, in a sense, they're acting in a way that's contrary to their usual justification,
right,
is which we don't have enough information. So I mean, personally, would like to find out more about this bill, but it is a little discouraging that they didn't pay enough attention to science.
I mean, and often this illustrates something else, which is some of these bills that really don't get much press attention. I mean, the bills that are relatively low, not particularly salient to most constituents, those actually can be the bills where special interests have the most power. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're worried about the power of special interests, it tends not to show up in the bills like medical aid and dying, where there's a ton of press coverage. It's these little, really specific bills that nobody else is paying attention to, where sometimes you can sneak something through.
And that's part of the problem, because we're just looking at so many bills that come through, and so many people who may have particular, you know, buy-in to those bills, and they don't necessarily appeal to everybody. And in picking and choosing how media is going to follow a particular set of bills or a bill, there's always that, well, how many people are going to be interested in this? Who is it going to really affect? If it's something that's narrow but really important, trying to move there. But when you've got 3,000 bills that you start with, it can sometimes just be utterly overwhelming. I don't mean that as an excuse, but you know, sometimes, you know, we've had people call us and say, you know, this is a really important bill and this is why, or we've just been talking about a bill and we go off and find out something about it and it turns out to be something that does need a great deal of conversation during a session.
I think all three of us are always shocked every time we do this show where we get a caller like the one who just called it and talks about a bill we've never even heard of. It's very important. And so this is the challenge.
Or at least one that we didn't pay enough attention to. Our apologies. Going now to Paulo, calling us from Kailua about the Airbnb bill.
I Paulo, just had a question wondering why they don't try to use taxable income from Airbnb or vacation rentals that might otherwise be useful for paying for the rail or other things that the state needs to afford to pay for.
Well, a lot of people are saying, why don't we use this tax? Why don't we try that tax? I mean, everybody's looking for money.
Well, there's a trap in these earmark things, and the legislature is, I think, appropriately careful about these generally. The good side is that, hey, you know, we can take it from here and put it over there. Legislators don't like to do that because, first of all, it limits their discretion in good ways. And secondly, it doesn't always work out so well if you put your eggs in one basket. To do it for Airbnb, since the whole tax issue is so much up in the air, how much they're really collecting anyway right now, that it you couldn't even have, I think, a dedicated income stream of any certainty if you went down that path right now.
And in general, though, we've kind of seen this move away from earmarks and moving away from having designated funds.
Yes, because they get used in the wrong way. They don't always work out the way. Actually, you get back to gaming, these kind of dedicated funds in gaming toward education, the politics of that makes it much less likely in other states that money is going to pass through just the way you think.
We had lots of discussion a few years back about the Master Tobacco Settlement and where those funds were going to be going and going off to the Cancer Center and how they were being used and trying to get some of them back for education. And you're right. It doesn't necessarily work the way you think it's going to work.
That's an interesting kind of earmark thing, because people were so confident about the earmark that they forgot that if, the policy was successful, there would be fewer people smoking. And if there are fewer people smoking, there'd
less
be
money.
Less revenue. And that's almost cost us the Cancer Center.
All right. Our number is 941-3689. But just a reminder, this is a rebroadcast of today's Town Square. And so phone calls will not be taken at the number given. But before we go off to another caller, let's take a look at some of what is happening tax-wise. Because that changed this time around. We saw the 9, 10, 11% sunset not too long ago, and now it's back.
That's right. I don't want folks to get too discouraged, because there were some good bills passed, or at least in my opinion, good bills. And one is tax reform that would reinstate the highest the highest income tax brackets, and would then use most of that money to give an earned income tax credit to the poor. That's about 20% of what they get to the federal government. This has been a real push by progressives for a long time here, and this was a victory. The second, which is a smaller bill, but I think still significant, and one I wanted to highlight before we run out of time, is the Kupuna Care bill. And the idea behind this is that you would get $70 a day to hire someone to do some of the care work that you might be doing right now for an elderly parent or a friend. You could apply for this money, and if mom has to go to Kaiser, you wouldn't have to take her. You could use a state or city service to do that, and you could stay in the workforce, so you wouldn't have to take time off. This is a really progressive and, frankly, very, very innovative bill. We're one of the first states to try something like this. It's kind of a pilot project right now, but I think there's a lot of hope that it can turn into a social insurance system.
And this one had huge buy-in, almost, what, unanimous?
That's right. I mean, and in part because, you know, the commitment was pretty small. I mean, it's a relatively small appropriation. They're going to study it for a year and then begin to slowly implement it.
Ai-Jin Poo was here talking about this for a long time.
And Ai-Jin Poo, the MacArthur Genius Scholar, was here to advocate for it. And they were using Hawaii as a test case. So if you believe Hawaii can still be a progressive state, there's evidence that we can, particularly in an issue like this where it affects a lot of people because we have so many multi-generational households, so many people are involved in caregiving. Everyone understands that if I can get a little help, I don't need to take a day off of work to help my mom, to help my dad. And this should make a big difference.
While you're talking about progressive, I want to ask you about another bill, too, before we run out of time. The fact that the decriminalization of the possession of drug paraphernalia.
Yes, that's they actually made it. If you're reducing the penalties for marijuana, then you should reduce them for paraphernalia. And that is a move in that direction. There's certainly no move at all toward the legalization of marijuana. But the kind of gradual decriminalization of that stuff is, in fact, a move. And I don't think there was very much resistance to that. The law and order people, I don't think, are prosecutor for Oahu, who is always willing to step in if he sees a hard law and order issue there. That was not a significant – that's an important issue. It's a fairness issue, a small fairness issue.
And some would also say the fairness issue would apply to limited service pregnancy centers and having the disclosure for what they really are.
Yes, yes, that's right.
And that one also went through. Okay, we're going to take another caller. Going now to Tyler, calling us from Kihei. Aloha, Tyler. Thank you for your patience.
Aloha. How's it going?
Pretty well, thanks.
Yeah, I was just calling. I've been recently a listener. I've been listening to you guys for the past year. I just find like I find good content and stuff you need to hear, not you should hear.
Thank you.
I'm calling in regard today. I'm 32. I'm kind of recently getting into politics more so every day, I guess, more concerned about where my tax dollars are going. And I guess my question to you guys today is I'm trying to find places and where to get the information and resources, you know, that are out there before it seems like these bills get passed or it seems like it's already far past due. I guess my main question, is there a resource that you guys recommend to online or, you know, anywhere to send somebody that really has no idea about bills or anything like that?
Well, a couple of things that I can think of, and guys, you chime in too. You know, certainly paying attention to what you hear on the radio, but being if you want to go and research a bill, going to the legislature's site itself, and then being able to go up to the public access room there. If you have a chance to be over here, paying attention to other sites, Civil Beat, others that where you can get pieces of information and start to put it together a little bit. But yes, sometimes you're going to have to do some research on a particular bill if it interests you and look at the testimony, be able to dig around a little bit. It's not easy, but if it's meaningful to you, it's worthwhile, guys.
Well, I mean, and I'll give away our secret here. The truth is that a lot of this isn't all that complicated. You just have to learn the language, and I think a lot of people find it particularly difficult because they don't know these terms. What is crossover? What are these
committees
do?
Right, but that's where the public access room can be really helpful.
Exactly right. So some of the most friendly people who work at the legislature in the public access room, if you're interested in learning this, go to them. They have a tremendous presentation. It's also online. And once you learn that language, it becomes much, much easier to follow a bill and understand what's going on. Before you do that, the whole process seems absolutely mysterious.
But I would also encourage you to read up generally on the policy issues that interest you, because even though they're very user friendly and people are willing to help you, it still is the language of the bill with maybe a little background. So if you're interested in, let's say, involving sustainability issues, that you do some reading, and pick out your own magazines, your journal, read good newspapers, and as you say, Civil Beat and some of these other things would certainly be included in there. But I think it's, you know, very few people in our society take the time to educate themselves politically in that kind of proactive way. But I think if you learn something about the policies, the specific language will make more sense to you.
So kudos to you for wanting to, Tyler. That's good news to our ears.
Your time, you guys. Yeah, and it's just, it seems like you don't know what to trust as far as what's valid information versus someone's opinion.
You know? Well, so. you can develop your own sense of media literacy by asking questions about what's the source. What kind of evidence is here? You can check other sources to see if it matches. Don't let the burgeoning of fake news or so-called fake news disempower you.
Because that's exactly what those who put out fake news are hoping for.
Yeah.
All right, Tyler. Thanks so much and good luck.
All right. Aloha, you guys. Thank you.
Aloha. And just a reminder, you're listening to a rebroadcast of Town Square, and calls will not be taken at the number given. As the Ledge is wrapping up today, we're taking a look at what passed, what didn't pass, what that says about this legislature that seems to be deadlocked over the biggest issue that overshadowed it, rail. Going back to our list of things that we've been looking at and how this shapes how we look at this, Neil, I want to let you have a chance to be able to pull out one of your favorites.
Well, we covered most of the favorite ones that I have. I guess the Attorney General must defend lifeguards. That whole lifeguard liability one is an interesting one because it looks now that the lifeguards had protection, liability. The notion is that if you're in that position, that you should have some protection against liability if you do something in the process of your work.
But then it's sunset.
That's right, and then it's sunset. And it looks like it's not going to be brought back. One of the arguments, there's a kind of public argument and private argument here. One of the public arguments made in defense of getting rid of this is that the other first responders don't have it. But there is a lingering notion that the personal injury lawyers who were very much interested in getting they're never all that interested in having protections against liability because they make their living challenging people.
And there's a number of them in the legislature.
Yes, there are.
Plus, I was waiting for you to say that.
Perhaps the most influential lobbyist in Hawaii was, in fact, the lobbyist on this one. And so it's an odd one. It just took on a kind of importance that it was hard for me to imagine because there's a kind of common sense notion here that you give these city and county lifeguards protection. They're not making a lot of money.
We've seen issues like this before. A couple of years ago, as you'll remember, when the DLNR shut down rock climbing.
Yes, the old rock climbing thing, yep.
There was surprising opposition to opening it up, and part of it was because a lot of personal injury lawyers wanted to preserve the right to sue the state. It's a very powerful lobby, and I think underappreciated sometimes.
The rock climbers worked very hard at that time.
And
they really organized. Yes, they did. Well, Colin and I both know some of the rock climbers. They had a pretty sophisticated campaign that was still an amateur campaign, not in terms of quality, but in terms of what they were up against.
Before we move on anymore, I want to just go back to sort of the character of this legislature and what we saw happen in different ways. For example, Tom Gorek failed confirmation. To what do you attribute that? We've heard lots of scuttlebutt about that and that this is sort of a slap to the governor, but
hey, it's not scuttlebutt. That's what they said. I mean, that's what the leaders of the opposition said. We're getting back at the governor for essentially sneaking that appointment in that may have been constitutionally acceptable on the basis of some kind of interpretation of the language, but in fact screwed us over. The legislature can get pretty feisty and pretty united when they think that their powers are being threatened. That's what a separation of powers is like. And this is when ex-Senator Ige becomes Governor Ige, and they didn't want to have any part of that.
And
regardless
if I can just,
of whether he was a good candidate or not.
Jump on this. I mean, if you're talking about a separation of powers issues, the other two that go along with that were the Judicial Selection Committee bill, which didn't go through.
Yeah.
But clearly, I think was probably retaliation for some judges' decisions about trying to mandate that the legislature give a certain amount of money to Hawaiian homelands. They went after the judges' pensions recently. That bill, again, didn't go through, but it got very close to moving.
Which sounds like an incursion into the independence of judiciary, and so sometimes you play the separation of powers one way, sometimes you play it another.
Which for a lot of people can be, A, very confusing, but also conflict with some basic ideas that they may have about what government should do and how it should do it, and take away some of the purity of it that they might have been taught in civics.
Well, if they were taught it in civics, they were taught incorrectly. I mean, the purpose of a separation of powers, whether it's at the state level or at the federal level, is separate institutions sharing powers. That's the classic definition. And that means that there are lots of gray areas and that you want them there. You're essentially there are very few areas.
But the retaliation part of that. And, well, and
but that's
the,
part of it. Ambition must counteract ambition.
Yeah,
right?
Well,
this is James Madison.
So it doesn't matter if you've got a good candidate or not.
Well, I don't know if he was a good candidate or not anyway. I have no idea because it really
I'm not passing
discussed.
Judgment on that.
I'm
just saying
no, I'm not either. I just don't know.
Someone who may be very good may simply not get the job because of a reason.
Well, you saw that with Marjorie Bronster in the Attorney General's office, which to me was even a more shady decision. This one I understand. It may not be something that I would, in a perfect political world, would like, but I certainly understand the legislature's response here.
Some of this raises a very important question, which I want to ask Neil, which is, where is Governor Ige in all of this? I mean, should he be more active? Should he have shown more leadership on rail? I mean, what's the governor doing this session?
Well, you heard what he said yesterday, which is that this is the purview of the legislature, and he is going to be hands-off with it and not going to be part of that. Some say that's a good thing. Some say that it goes right back to the idea of separation of powers, and some say that, well, where is he in all this, and shouldn't we see more leadership from him? Where do you weigh?
Well, I wish this were tomorrow because I'm interviewing the governor at 5:30 this afternoon, and I might have more
plug,
to say
plug.
About this. I think that he is... First of all, when he is, first of all, his strength at putting people together is not based on any kind of power in the general sense or charisma. It's based on the fact that people trust him and see him as an expert in certain areas. In this one, I think he doesn't think he has anything to offer on rail, and I think he's right. I don't mean that in a bad way. You don't commit your willingness to negotiate. And I think in some small way he might have learned that doing this kind of thing is much harder than he thought. His experience with the state health system is the equivalent of Donald Trump saying, you know, this job is harder than I thought. He was full of hubris about how he was going to make this thing work at the Maui Hospital. It didn't work the way he wanted to. It took a lot longer. So I think, you know, we tend not to want to have people who are really charismatic and powerful because we worry about them until we need them. And so I don't, you know, this is not about a general notion about when he would and when he won't. I think if you look at rail is a political disaster. Unless you have something that you really can offer, and he's got enough sense of the legislature to know whether that's there or not, you're just not going to get involved.
Back off.
Yeah, because it's not cowardice, it's discretion. It's, there isn't anything he can do.
It's prudence.
It's prudence, yeah. And I think he could probably use up some of his stuff and make things worse. Now, you may want a different kind of governor. That's not the question, but that's the kind of governor he is.
All right, we've got a little less than 2 minutes before we're going to have to say goodbye. Clearly, this is the last day of the session, and at noon, the session is still
is.
Is
there anything clearly about this? I mean, well, I guess
mean,
it does end. Yeah,
well, it's going to end. I mean, as far as we know today, it's going to end. I mean, you heard the governor being asked that yesterday, and unless the legislature were to say it was going to extend itself and probably not going to happen. But here we're ending with this tremendous thing hanging. It's like Damocles over our heads. What happens now? How do we go forward? How do you see the state moving forward?
They have
to come up your hands.
Look, they've got to come up with the money for rail. It's either going to come from extending the GET or, you know, the Caldwell nightmare scenario that they have to raise property taxes.
Or maybe a little of everything.
Maybe a little of everything. I mean, I'm sort of looking forward to a time where rail doesn't suck up all the oxygen in the room and some of these other bills can get a little more attention.
A few of our listeners would probably agree with you on that one. Neil?
Well, here's the question I have about rail. What happens now as far as the feds are concerned? I mean, essentially, the mayor was just there and said, well, we can do the technical stuff. We'll get back to you on the money. And now it's even worse.
Oh, that's a great place for us to end. Neil Milner, Colin Moore, thanks so much. And thank you for joining us today for Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. I'll see you tomorrow morning for The Conversation.